God is sending a message to Israel. And of course, as we've looked at the last several weeks, he's doing it in a very unconventional way. He has asked Hosea to be a prophet that will carry his message to the people of Israel by first marrying a prostitute named Gomer. And so as we looked in the opening two chapters of Hosea, Gomer gives birth to a child by Hosea early in the marriage, but it was shortly thereafter that she returned to her ways of harlotry. And then we see her giving birth to two more children that didn't belong to Hosea, and then up and left him for good. But yet through it all, Hosea remained steadfastly committed to her. He continued to provide for her, even though she was deceived into thinking that those provisions had come from her lovers. He committed himself to lure her back. He even went as far as traveling to the very places, perhaps even the very bedrooms of her adulterous affairs, to bring her back home to him. This is what we mean by the unconventional way by which God is using the prophet Hosea to send this message to Israel. This is whom God is using to preach and proclaim it. And why, we have to ask. Why is God doing this? Well, one clear reason. Because it is Hosea and Gomer's relationship that is exactly what is being carried out by God and the nation of Israel. The people of Israel are his people. God has chose them. God has delivered them. God made them his. And now they have abandoned him. And they've abandoned him by giving in to spiritual adultery. And so now God is pronouncing judgment upon the nation, judgment upon Israel, as they face the consequences of their unfaithfulness. And he's doing it in this peculiar way by using Hosea, a prophet, a godly and pure man, by showing and illustrating through his going after and marrying a wife of harlotry and yet remaining faithful to her even as she goes back into her same old ways. As we come to chapter 8 here, Hosea begins the chapter by calling for a trumpet to be blown. Now look at it there in verse number 1. He said, "Set the trumpet to thy mouth." I think that's important for a couple of reasons. To the Jews, a trumpet announced a special occasion. They would blow the trumpet in preparation for a feast or celebration that they would have. But they would also use a trumpet to gather the people together for assembly, for worship. It'd be very, very similar as they used decades gone by. They would use a church bell oftentimes to ring that bell to signify that they're gathering for worship, gathering for prayer, gathering for those sort of things. And that's what they would do with the trumpet. They would blow the trumpet for special occasions. They would blow the trumpet to gather the people together for an assembly of worship. They would also use the trumpet to prepare the people by way of an alarm if enemy armies were encroaching against them. And by the way, those trumpets, those alarms were always warnings to Israel. They were made available to give space for preparation on their parts. And so the trumpet would blow, "Hey, the enemies are coming. Sound the alarm, blow the trumpet, give a warning, let us prepare for what is to come." And so it is spiritually in our lives. But God will often sound an alarm, so to speak. He will blow a trumpet. He will give his people an opportunity to be warned of what is coming ahead so that they can come back to him, repent of their ways, and to find themselves in the place of safety. Of course, there's going to be times in all of our lives when God sounds forth an alarm. And when he does sound that alarm, when he does blow that trumpet in your life, it's time to wake up and it's time to listen. And it's time to give heed to what he is trying to warn us and protect us from. And that's the whole imagery here. Hosea said, set the trumpet to thy mouth. I've got something important to say. I've got an alarm to sound, a warning to give. There is something you need to know before things get worse. And so, verse 2, all the way down through verse 6, he begins to identify the judgment that is coming because the nation of Israel had not sought the Lord. So he says in verse 2, he shall come. Who's he? God. God will come as an eagle against the house of the Lord because they have transgressed his covenant. They have sinned against his law. And at that point, he says in verse 2, Israel's going to cry, God, we're yours. We belong to you. We're your people. How could you do this? But yet, verse 3, Israel have cast off the thing that is good. They don't really care about God. So the enemy's going to pursue them. And then he begins to list all the problems. They set up kings that God did not approve of. They took their silver and their gold and they made them idols. By the way, that is something that Israel had been known for all throughout all their history. It wasn't something that just was done when Moses was on the mountain and Aaron got in the way. No, they've been doing this for years. You would have thought they had learned their lesson from now. But they just remained unrepentant. They remained in a season of rebellion, and God says, judgment's coming. Judgment's coming. Let's look at this as a form of an outline tonight. Number one, write this down in your notes. The first thing we see is the law of the harvest. The law of the harvest. And just what is the law of the harvest? Well, the law of the harvest is simple. You reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. That's the law of the harvest. And that sowing and reaping, it goes both ways in respect to what we reap in relation to what we sow. In other words, it's not just the bad seed sown that will reap. Good seed sown will reap also. It goes both ways. In fact, whatever it is we sow, whatever it is, good or bad or mediocre, whatever seed we put in the ground is going to reap a harvest. That's the law of the harvest. We understand that even in agricultural terms today. Whatever we sow, we will reap. And God says it is true of our lives spiritually. In fact, Paul told the Galatian believers in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7, be not deceived, God is not mocked. In other words, stop deceiving yourself into thinking you can do whatever you want to do by means of mocking God and he's going to let you by with it. That's not how God works. Be not deceived. God will not be mocked. He will not allow you to sow whatever you want to sow without you reaping something for your deeds. So he goes on to say, whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to the flesh shall the flesh reap corruption, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall the Spirit reap life everlasting. So it goes both ways. You reap what you sow. You sow to the flesh, your flesh reaps corruption. You sow to the Spirit, your spirit reaps the benefits of everlasting life. And here's how Hosea said it in relation to Israel. Look at it there in verse number 7. For they have sown the wind. Here's the law of the harvest. They have sown the wind, but they're going to reap the whirlwind. They sowed the wind, so now they're going to reap the whirlwind. In other words, Israel had been sowing seeds of vanity, seeds of foolishness. I think it's quite interesting that he uses the terminology wind here, as if they're just sowing into nothingness. And now it's for certain. Though they sowed the wind, they're going to reap the whirlwind. That is, the harvest reaped is going to be more powerful than the seed sown. And I think so often we lose sight of that in our lives spiritually. That it's not some equal fair trade when it comes to reaping and sowing. That God will just at least cause me to reap just the little increments amount of what I sow. No, no, it's going to be far worse when the harvest comes than it is with the seed that's sown. We know that even true in agricultural terms. You put the small seed in the ground and that seed can springing forth way more power, way more abundance than the seed that was planted in the ground. And so it is so often with our sin. When we sow the wind, when we sow the things that we think are insignificant, small, what's the big deal? Nobody notices. Listen, when the harvest comes, it's going to be way more abundant, way more powerful than the seed we ever sowed. And Israel had sown the seed of spiritual adultery. And now they're going to reap the whirlwind of destruction. And the principle is the same for our lives today. We will reap what we sow, good or bad. The harvest will come. And the point can never be too emphasized. Sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. What seems to be lovely, what seems to be nice, what seems to be this great cool breeze today, it'll become an ugly tornado tomorrow. That's what Hosea is saying. It's always far worse when the harvest comes than it was the day we sowed the seed. It's been put in many different lights by many different people, and certain of who it's credited to, but the thought is clear. The statement goes like this: sow a thought, reap an act. Sow a thought, reap an act. But it doesn't stop there. You sow a thought, you reap an act. You sow an act, you reap a habit. But it doesn't stop there, because when you sow a habit, then you begin to reap a character. But it doesn't stop there, because when you sow a character, you eventually reap a destiny. The point is, the harvest is always greater than the seed sown. Sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. This is the law of the harvest. Gomer was experiencing it in relation to her marriage with Hosea. Israel is experiencing it in relation to their adultery against God. And we as well will experience it when we sow that which is contrary to obedience to Christ. We will reap what we sow. Moses was very clear. Jesus reiterated it in the New Covenant. Be sure your sin will find you out, and left unrepentant, it will be far less, or far worse, excuse me, than you ever dreamed. And so Hosea gives them here, first of all, the law of the harvest. You've sown the wind, you're going to reap the whirlwind. But write down the second one. Number two, the heart of the problem, the heart of the problem. All right, what's the big deal? All right, sowing the wind, what have they done? Well, Israel's had a lot of problems, a lot of problems. Think about a couple of them mentioned here in this passage before us. One, they had prostituted themselves to form worldly alliances and acceptance, but in the end, they lost everything. Look at it in verse number 9. For they are gone up to Assyria, a wild ass alone by himself. Ephraim hath hired lovers. The imagery is Israel had prostituted themselves. They tried to form alliances with other nations, enemy nations, nations like Assyria. But the truth of the matter is they were left to themselves. Nobody wanted to partner with them. Verse 10, yea, though they have hired among the nations, now will I gather them. They shall sorrow a little for the burden of the king of princes. He says it's going to be far worse. They're going to lose everything, and they did lose everything. Israel's got a lot of problems. They prostitute themselves, they form these worldly alliances, they want to be accepted by neighboring communities. But then they also, in verse 11 through 13, began to pervert their worship. And they did it by doing several things. They multiplied their altars, they rejected the word, they were caught just simply going through the motions rather than living out genuine faith. Look at it in verse 11. Because Ephraim, again, this Israel, hath made many altars to sin. Altars shall be unto him to sin. In other words, they're multiplying idolatry here. Instead of approaching God in worship the way that God had led them and taught them and commanded them. They would build whatever image they wanted to build, whatever altar they would want to construct. They would worship however they wanted to, and thereby causing places of quote unquote worship to be acts of sin into their lives. And so God says, great judgment's going to come. You've multiplied your altars. You've rejected the word. Look at verse 11. I have written to him the great things of my law, but they were counted as a strange thing. God said, I've given you my word. I've given you the great things of my word, my heart, my mind, everything that I am. I have given it to you within the law, but you've rejected it. You think it's weird. You think it's strange. You don't know it. And then, verse 13, they sacrifice flesh for the sacrifices of mine offerings and eat it, but the Lord accepted them not. Now will he remember their iniquity and visit their sins? They shall return to Egypt. They're going to go right back into the same bondage they've been in before. Why? Because they're just going through the motions. And you can't look at this primarily by just Israel's thing. This is so transparent even in our own lives. One of the surest ways to go back into that bondage, to head right into the trap of Egypt, is to just go through the motions. To reject his word. To build idols in your life. And the problem wasn't so much that Israel was just out and out agnostic against God. No, it's that they wanted Jesus among all the other things that they had. Creating idolatry, false worship, unyieldedness to God's will for their lives. You see, Israel had a lot of problems. But verse number 14 underlines what was the heart of all their problems. I mean, verse 14 tells us why they just went through the motions of religious sacrifice. Why they rejected his word. Why they were guilty of idolatry. Why they had prostituted themselves to worldly alliances and being accepted by enemy territories. It's clear. Verse 14. Because Israel hath forgotten his maker. That's the heart of the problem. Israel, you see it? Hath forgotten his maker. And because Israel hath forgotten his maker, he goes and builds his own temples. Judah even had multiplied fenced cities, but I will send a fire and it will devour the palaces thereof. Judgment is coming. Judgment is coming because you have forgotten me. And by the way, God warned them about this. Hold your finger there in Hosea. Flip over to Deuteronomy chapter 8. I want you to see this quickly tonight. Deuteronomy chapter 8. God warned them about this. Deuteronomy chapter 8. Way back when God was forming the nation of Israel under the leadership of Moses. He had established his law. He was emphasizing to them the importance of being faithful and passing on the commandments and teaching these things from generation to generation. He's very specific about the warning here. Look at Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse number 10. He says, when thou hast eaten and art full, then thou shalt bless the Lord thy God for the good land which he hath given thee. Beware, verse 11, that thou forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes which I command thee this day. Lest when thou hast eaten and art full and has built goodly houses and dwell therein, and when thy herds and thy flocks multiply and thy silver and thy gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied. You know what he's saying? Hey, be careful that in my blessings in your life, yeah, the blessings of food on the table, the blessings of good houses to live in, the blessings of a satisfactory life. Be careful, verse 14, because it's then your heart can be lifted up. What are you talking about? It's then you get prideful. That humble heart that once recognized everything I have, everything I possess, the breath that I breathe has come to me from an act of graciousness by God. No, no, no. It all changes when you forget the Lord, because pride swells up and you think, look at what I've done. Look at what I've accomplished. Look at what I'm doing. And that, what happens, verse 14? Thou forget the Lord thy God, which brought thee forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. You forget the one who brought you out of nothing, who led thee through, verse 15, that great and terrible wilderness wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there were no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which thy fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, that he might prove thee, to do thee good at the latter end. And thou say in thine heart, all my power and the might of my hand have gotten me this well. Look at what I've done. But thou shalt, verse 18, remember the Lord thy God. For it is he that giveth thee power to get wealth. He establishes covenant which he sware unto thy fathers as it is today. And it shall be, if thou do at all forget the Lord thy God. Look at this. This is the warning. If you do forget God and walk after other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that ye shall surely perish. As the nations which the Lord destroyeth before your face, so shall ye perish, because you would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. God said, I'm just warning you. When you begin to live in my provisions and blessings and you think for a single moment that you're the one responsible for this, oh, be careful that you don't forget me. Because when you forget me, judgment is sure to come. And friend, at the heart of my life, at the heart of your life, at the heart of our lives, self-inflicted problems, is a person who has forgotten the Lord. Forgotten the Lord. How did Gomer run off from Hosea? Has she forgotten about the man that, in an unconventional way, fell in love with her? She had forgotten what he had committed to her. Why is it that Israel is now dispersing their life into such idolatrous and adulterous way? Because they've forgotten their maker. How is it that we often stray and drift and give in to these same things, rejecting the word, going through the motions, setting up idols in our life? You see, the heart of the problem is always forgetting God, leaving him out. And that's why this judgment is ultimately coming. And so Hosea says, sound the trumpet. The law of the harvest is taking place. You've sown the wind. You're going to reap the whirlwind. He tells them the heart of the problem. Yeah, you've done crazy things, but the bottom line is you've forgotten your maker. Write this down. Number three, the attitude of the people. The attitude of the people. This is where we come into chapter number 9. And what Hosea is doing here is he's showing us a progression. People begin to sow their wild oats, and then they soon forget God. And when an awareness of God is no longer engraved upon your conscience, it is then you fully live precisely how you want to live without any credence given to a sovereign creator. It's why we're in the condition that we are as a world today, as a nation. The reason why it blows our minds that people would behave in such unreal manners is because at the heart of all of it, we've forgotten our maker. We have not given credence to a creator. We've not recognized God. And so when you come here to chapter 9 and verse 1, through all of that, you find something quite staggering. Israel is singing, they're dancing, they're celebrating in their sin. And Hosea says, stop! Look at it, verse 1. Rejoice not, O Israel, for joy as other people, for thou hast gone whoring from thy God. Look at you. You're partying, you're celebrating, you're dancing like every other nation that is agnostic against the Lord. You have no reason to be rejoicing. The judgment of God is coming for you. Look at it in verse 2. The floor and the winepress shall not feed them. The new wine shall fail in her. They shall not dwell in the Lord's land. But Ephraim shall return to Egypt. They shall eat unclean things in Assyria. They shall not offer wine offerings to the Lord, neither shall they be pleasing unto him. Their sacrifices shall be unto them as the bread of mourners. And all that eat thereof shall be polluted, for their bread, for their soul shall not come into the house of the Lord. What will ye do in the solemn day, in the day of the feast of the Lord? For lo, they are gone because of destruction. Egypt shall gather them up. Memphis, that's not Tennessee, that's in the middle of Egypt, shall bury them. The pleasant places for their silver. Nettles shall possess them. Thorns shall be. Pastor, what in the world is he saying? Why in the world are you so joyful when you are so rebellious against God? Judgment is coming for you. Judgment is coming. The days, verse 7, of visitation have come. The days of recompense are here. The attitude of the people? They didn't care. We've offended God, so what? We're sinning in rebellion against him. What time was the party again? He's not going to punish us. Judgment's not going to come. We're his people, remember? We're his people. But then when you come to verse number 7, you see really how far their hearts had strayed. The attitude of the people, look at it toward the prophet of God. Israel shall know it, verse 7, the prophet is a fool. This is Israel speaking. The prophet is a fool. The spiritual man is mad. For the multitude of thine iniquity and the great hatred, the watchman of Ephraim, that's Hosea, was with my God. But the prophet is a snare of a fowler in all his ways, and hatred in the house of God. Instead of listening and yielding, they ridiculed the prophets. They called the preachers fools and madmen. See, Hosea was there on a mission from God. But the people who had gathered themselves together in the house of God, verse number 8, hated him. And they hated his message. I find the image in Christ staggering. Because this hatred for God's man, this hatred for the prophet of the Lord, is not coming from Assyria. It's coming from the house of God. The very place where his word should be revered, the very place where his prophet should be heeded to. In their minds, their attitude, the madman. He tells us things that we don't like. We don't want to hear about this judgment. We don't want you to tell us not to party anymore. We like life the way we're living it. And do these attitudes ever really leave? No. 3,000 years later, here we are. The same sentiment in the house of God in so many places. He's a madman. Why would I go to church where he wants to tell me what to do? They hated him. And it's so bad here in verse number 9. Look at it. They have deeply corrupted themselves as in the days of Gibeah. I have time to take you there tonight. Perhaps you write this down in your notes. Judges chapter 19. Look it up, particularly verse 30. The days of Gibeah were the lowest points of Israel. Sexual misconduct in the lewdest sense. graphic sins, mutilation. And that's what God is comparing their current spiritual condition to. In verse number 9, you're acting like those in the days of Gibeah. Therefore, he will remember your iniquity. He will visit your sins. The law of the harvest. You sow the wind, you're going to reap the whirlwind. At the heart of every act of disobedience, every religious motion that you go through, every denial of God's word, at the heart of the problem is there's no credence to a maker. You've forgotten the Lord. And your attitude, Hosea says, look at you. Instead of listening and receiving and opening your heart and mind to the message of God, you hate it. You hate it. And the rest may be probably some of the saddest verses in all the Bible. In fact, they're very difficult to understand fully. If you've been reading ahead, maybe you've been hoping I'd shed some light on it. I'm not so sure that I can. Write this last one down, number 4, the grief of the nation. The grief of the nation. Verse 10 says, I found Israel, this is God speaking, like grapes in the wilderness. Now just think about things when you're studying your Bibles. Grapes in the wilderness, that would be a rarity. Grapes in the wilderness. So God says, when I found you, I found you in a place where people don't survive. And you were like grapes to me. Grapes. I saw your fathers, verse 10, as the first ripe in the fig tree at her first time, but they went to Baal. They ran off from me. They committed spiritual adultery. They separated themselves unto that shame. Notice this, and their abominations were according as they loved. In other words, when I found you as grapes in the wilderness. It's just another idiom for the apple of my eye. But now you've become what you have loved. Look at it, verse 10. Their abominations were according to as they loved. You've become what you loved. It's an interesting thought, isn't it? The old saying, you are what you eat. Well, it is true that you are what you love. That's why the greatest of all commandments is to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, soul, and mind. Because if you love God, heart, soul, and mind, you will become what you love. You'll become like Christ. But when you're not loving God, heart, soul, and mind, when you're loving the idols of this world, when you're loving yourself, when you're loving these abominations, as it's put here in Hosea's terms, you will become that. You will become a prisoner to that, in bondage to that. And in verse 11, God gets real specific about the judgment. He says, as for Ephraim, their glory shall fly away like a bird. What was their glory? You got to think about this. In fact, you got to go all the way back to the beginning. Genesis chapter 13. When God said unto Abram, I will make thee a great nation. I will bless you and multiply you and your seed will be like the stars of the sky, unnumbered. That was always the glory of Israel. It was this growing, powerful, unstoppable people. And God says, I'm going to cause your glory to fly away. Look at it. From the birth, from the womb, from the conception. He says, I'm going to cause you to be barren. I'm going to remove your blessing. By the way, having children in the Bible was seen as a blessing from God. I know it's not often as looked upon that today. But when God blessed you with children, He was smiling upon you. That's why Psalm, look, hold your finger there. Look at this verse, Psalm 127. Turn over there real quick. Psalm 127. I'm almost done. Look at this, Psalm 127. Look at verse number 3. 127, verse 3. Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord. They're a blessing from God. Children are a gift from God, and the fruit of the womb is His reward. He says, how do I know God is blessing you? When He gives you lots of kids. That's how God did it with Israel. He even says in verse number 5, in fact, happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them. Well, Pastor, how many is that? How many is a quiver full? I think 3. Pretty sure it's 3. I'm pretty sure it's 3. I don't know. I think he's pushing it if there's 4, but 3 is definite here, all right? Oh, there should not be a shame. There should be with the enemies of the gate. What's he saying? He's reminding them, children are a blessing of God, but now God says that the blessing is going to be taken away. He's not going to allow them to conceive. Verse 12, though they bring up their children, yet will I bereave them. It's an interesting thought. Funeral terminology. He says the judgment's going to be so bad that those who already have kids are going to wish that they had not brought them into the world that they're going to be living in. Shall not be a man left, verse 12. Woe also to them when I depart. Ephraim, as a salt Tyre, is planted in a pleasant place, but Ephraim shall bring forth his children to the murderer. They're going to bring them into the world, and the world's going to slaughter them. Hosea prays in verse 14. This is where it gets really, really hard to fully understand what's going on in this conversation, but it's as if Hosea is praying, give them, O Lord, what thou wilt give. In other words, Hosea is saying, God, we deserve this. Well, whatever you choose, we know we deserve it. So give to us what we deserve. A miscarrying womb. It's just the glory, it's gone. The ability to give birth, the ability to have children, the conception. No, it's not. Their mothers will not experience the blessing of this gift from God. Why? Verse 15. Because all their wickedness is in Gilgal. There I hated them, the witness of their doings. I will drive them out of mine house. I will love them no more. All their princes are revolters. Ephraim is smitten. Their root is dried up. They shall bear no fruit. Yea, though they bring forth, yet will I slay even the beloved fruit of their womb. My God will cast them away because they did not hearken unto Him. And they will be wanderers among the nations. I think you understand why these sections of verses are very hard to understand. But what is apparent to me is that this judgment relating to the children particularly is going to bring great grief over the nation. That in Israel's alliances, that they had gone so far deep in their rebellion that their choices were now going to reap consequences that would wreak havoc on the womb. And I think the parallels are obvious. Sin has devastating consequences, church. Even Hosea at one point withdrew his provisions from Gomer in order that she might wake up to her sin and realize her true condition. This is where we're going to close tonight. You're in chapter 9. Flip over to chapter 2 and see the parallel of Hosea and Gomer in conjunction with God and Israel. Look at chapter 2, verse 9. This is where the illustration of God and Israel come into play in Hosea and Gomer's life. Verse 9, therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool, my flax given to cover her nakedness. In other words, all the things that I've provided, all the blessings, I'm going to take it away. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand. I'll also cause all her mirth to cease, her feast days, her near moons, her Sabbath, all her solemn feasts. Now the imagery kind of shifts over to God speaking to Israel once again. I will destroy her vines, her fig trees, wherever she hath said, there are my rewards that my lovers have given me, and I will make them a forest, and the beast of the field shall eat them. And I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense to them. She decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers and forgot me, saith the Lord. Perhaps the warning is clear to us tonight. If we sow the wind, we will reap the whirlwind. And even though we may not understand to the fullest all the intricacies involved in what God was fixing to do, as we would later find out in his word with the Assyrian attack upon Israel, we do know this, that you and I have absolutely zero control over the consequences of unrepentant sin. No control. And you know why that's so hard for us? It's because we like to be in control of everything. So control the seed. Sow to whatever your heart desires, even if it's the wind. But don't forget that the tornado will come. And when it does, it'll bring grief into your life like you never imagined. And that is the lesson. Now, we're getting closer to the ending of this book, where the illustration of Hosea going after Gomer and bringing her home is God going back after Israel and saying, come home, and grace and forgiveness and all that. But there is a grief involved. There are sin's consequences. There's a price to pay. And Gomer experiencing the grief of her lewdness. Israel now experiencing the grief of their idolatry. It should be no surprise to you when great grief comes into our life, when we've forgotten the Lord. May God help us not to forget the Lord.